This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The midterm election is in the books. Now comes the analysis, starting with McLean County Democratic Party Chair Eric Rankin and GOP County Head Connie Beard.
Listen, I mean, we picked up seats. There's no way that you could spin it other way than that. And we're making some movement, and every change requires baby steps.
I think where we were successful was where in the precincts and districts where we could knock on more doors and people could have a face-to-face encounter with our candidates.
Beard and Rankin tell us more about how they view the local balloting. Plus, Illinois State University political scientists Carrie Melita and Tom McClure look at the trends in Illinois and beyond. All that and a GLT News update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from GLT listeners. Join the community of news consumers who listen to Sound Ideas and are also willing to support it financially. Learn more about listener-supported radio and GLT at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Democrat J.B. Pritzker clobbered Republican incumbent Governor Bruce Rauner in yesterday's election. The billionaire celebrated by delivering an over-the-top optimistic speech about the direction Illinois is headed. IPR's Tony Arnold has more.
Pritzker won by 14 points. He won in places Democratic candidates for governor have not won since the Titanic sank. Places like DuPage County and other collar counties, Lake, Kendall, Kane, and Will counties, and in some areas in western Illinois. In J.B. Pritzker's victory speech, he was jubilant.
Democrats across the state, from county board races to statewide races, won in part because of you. You all win the Game of Thrones award tonight.
The heir to the Hyatt Hotel franchise gave millions of his own fortune to help support Democrats down the ticket. He's given his campaign $171.5 million, a record for self-funding. But the payoff for Pritzker is that Democrats won every statewide office: Secretary of State, Comptroller, Treasurer, and Attorney General. And Democrats picked up several seats in the state legislature, expanding their already large majority. Pritzker singled out immigrants, young people, and women for helping deliver the resounding victory in Illinois.
The women of this day who stand on the crest of the wave of history and know that it comes to today with the force of the millions of voices long silenced and suddenly let free, you wear the mantle of this moment well.
In a way, Pritzker's winning strategy in 2018 duplicated Rauner's in 2014. Spend tens of millions of your own dollars and knock out an unpopular incumbent. But this time, Rauner had to spend a lot of his campaign trying to win back conservatives who were upset he signed a bill allowing Medicaid to cover abortions. He also argued that this election was not about partisanship, but saving the state from the brink of collapse. Rauner said Illinois would be so doomed if he didn't win re-election that he used the F-word in a TV ad to describe how bad it would be. But he struck a completely different tone in his concession speech. He lamented that these days, decency often feels at risk.
This is a time for us to come together. This is a time for us to unite. This is a time for us to put aside partisan politics, to move forward together as the citizens of Illinois to create a better future for our children and our grandchildren.
Rauner said his principled fighting over the past 4 years brought sanity to the state's fiscal affairs. Illinois currently owes more than $7 billion to its contractors, at least $130 billion to its retirement systems for state workers and teachers, and its credit rating is barely above junk status. And it's not clear how Pritzker intends to immediately address those now that he's going to be running the show. Pritzker's pitched legalizing and taxing marijuana, expanding gambling, and upending the state's income tax system without ever telling people what he thinks they should be paying. Pritzker did not address those in his victory speech. In fact, he called for liberal causes that could cost the state even more money: health care for everyone, a living wage. But he said he still wants a, quote, responsible state budget. Pritzker then acknowledged an upcoming milestone. Illinois' bicentennial is in a few weeks.
Join me in beginning our third century in Illinois with hope and optimism and living every day better for the 200 years we lived before it.
Pritzker's immediate strategy appears to be promoting Illinois, even at a time when it may not feel like there's much to promote. I'm Tony Arnold.
Coming up on 89.1 and WGLT.org, we'll hear from the party chairs for Democrats and Republicans in McLean County. This is Sound Ideas.
Support for GLT comes from the Illinois Prairie Community Foundation, celebrating local philanthropy on November 15th with a workshop for nonprofits and a luncheon honoring Dwayne and Tony Farrington, the 2018 Philanthropists of the Year. Details at ilprairiecf.org. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
We're Bloomington Normal's public media. The Democratic Party of McLean County picked up two seats on the county board in Tuesday's election. Democrats elected three new women candidates and a 19-year-old college student to the board. That was not a blue wave. The new seat balance on the board is 13 Republicans and 7 Democrats. But in this conversation with GLT's Mary Cullen, party chair Eric Rankin says any gain is a win.
We have to be happy with the direction of the Democratic Party. I mean, there's no way that we could look at what just happened as a net negative. Everything that came out of this was a positive. We have seen strong candidates. They've run. Lizzie ran an incredible race, knocked off a chairman of the finance committee. You saw Sharon Chung knocking off a relative newcomer in Ryan Scritchlow, so that's a pretty new and incredible race. And Logan is a 19-year-old kid, which is fantastic. I mean, it shows a different side of the McLean County Board that I think is sometimes very sorely overlooked.
How are you going to continue this momentum now leading into 2020?
You know, I hate to tell people this, but it's pretty easy. I mean, people are really excited. I mean, tonight did nothing but energize people that 2020 and the direction of our party is real. We're there to support our candidates. We're there to work with them. We're there to help and provide them some structure. And I think that we're going to see in 2020, I'm going to say it right here, right now, that the McLean County Democrats are going to take the McLean County Board in 2020.
What do you think tonight's totals mean for President Donald Trump and the Republican Party?
You know, I think that the easiest thing that we could say is that I think in some respects it is obviously a repudiation of the tone of the president. Unfortunately, the president is just not very presidential. And I don't say that just from the perspective of the Democratic Party. I think that what President Trump should look at is even the actions and the attitudes of previous Republicans. He comports himself as a child. He throws tantrums and fits often. He calls people's names, which is beneath the office in and of itself. I hope that he will find a way, because now he's going to have to find a way to work with the Democratic Congress, not just the McLean County Democrats or the McLean County Republicans, but the Democrats and Republicans of the United States deserve to have a president that has the ability to work across the aisle, that has the ability to have serious adult conversations without debasing other people and calling people names. I think that it's time that we see how do we move ourselves forward.
And so what message does this send with the increase in Democratic candidates? The Democrats have taken over control of the House.
Yep.
So what now?
Yeah, so I think what now is that very obviously the president has to figure out a way to check his rhetoric, to realize that he's going to have to work with the Democrats in order to get any piece of significant legislation that he's interested in getting pushed through is going to have to go through the Democratic Party. I don't think that is necessarily it's not a non-starter. I think that the president has the ability to sit down and talk with people, that are different from him. But he's going to have to work across the aisle. He's going to have to treat Democrats with respect. And believe it or not, I mean, listening to his rhetoric on the campaign trail, he treats Democrats with the least amount of respect of any other group that I've ever seen. How do you try and work across the aisle when you constantly call people names and humiliate them for who they are as people? It's a difficult proposition for him.
Nikita Richards' loss for McLean County Clerk was felt pretty hard in the room. And we also heard heard that Rauner won the overall vote in McLean County. So what now for the party?
Party-wise, I think that, you know, Nikita losing is not necessarily as much of a repudiation. I think Nikita did an incredible job of running for office. I'm not kidding you. I mean, she talked to everybody inside the county, outside the county. She worked with people across the state. Nikita is an incredible candidate. What I think it says here is that this county still has some issues with people of color, and I'm concerned about that. I mean, I'm certainly concerned about that. I hope that people will be able to listen to candidates for the feelings that they have for the positions that they stake out, and attach themselves to those specific feelings rather than vote on identity politics. And I think that that is something that the Republican Party has very clearly staked their claim to. The rampant claims of immigration issues and just overt racism from our president, I think that has trickled down even to local levels.
So I mentioned it a bit earlier. The Democratic Party gained 2 seats on McLean County Board. So how is that a blue wave in the county?
So, I mean, a blue wave, we picked up seats. There's no way that you could spin it other way than that. We're making some movement, and every change requires baby steps. It requires a process to get to the point that you're actually looking at. Picking up 2 seats is a good thing. It provides us with an opportunity to look forward to 2020 and say, hey, listen, there's no reason that we can't pick up 3 seats. And guess what? Now if the Democrats pick up 3 seats, now the Democrats have 10 elected officials to the Republicans' 10 elected officials. Now, all of a sudden, we have a totally different ball game. And I think very clearly, this new administration that we have in the McLean County Democratic Party is strong. It's energized. It's ready to work. We just started in April. So that gave us just a few months. You give us 2 years, and I can't wait to have this conversation with you sitting in this chair 2 years from now. It's going to be a very different conversation.
So now let's talk a little bit about the success of Democratic women in the county.
Yeah, great. I mean, I think our party has, it's if you take a look at it across the board, I mean, who won? It was all our women. They did great. They connected with voters in a very real way. They talked to voters in a very real way. So I think that it is, these are now role models between Sharon Chung and Shannon Wachinski and Lizzie Johnston. These are all very similar type of people that are strong working moms, that some of them have kids, and all of them have kids, and that they are showing that there's a way that you can be a civically engaged individual at the same time as being the type of person that cares about their community and their workplace as well. I'm really excited. I think that all this does is send a message to the rest of the women in McLean County. Hey, guess what? You should run for office. And we're going to encourage every female up and down the line in the McLean County Democratic Party. You should run for public office. I mean, it's not just the Democratic Party looking at the county board. We're talking about countywide elected offices, and we're going to come back to talking about Congress and talking about all these other offices that are going to be up. I think the Democrats are going to be in a great position in 2020. 2018 was the first step in the big change that's coming in 2020.
That was McLean County Democratic Party Chair Eric Rankin talking with GLT's Mary Cullen. McLean County Republicans are pointing to some gains and holds, even though they lost those 2 seats on the county board and failed to push through a proposal to dissolve the Bloomington Election Commission. It was Connie Beard's first general election since being named party chair in McLean County. In this conversation with GLT's Eric Stock, Beard says the so-called blue wave, an infusion of Democratic cash in local races, and confusion about the ballot question all contributed to tipping scales in the Democrats' favor.
On the state level, yes, it is disappointing. We are now in a one-party control for the state of Illinois, and I firmly believe that it won't take long before the state to realize that they're in deeper trouble now because the policies that brought us to an economic cliff are now just going to be furthered by the party that's going to be in power. So it's going to be a hard lesson to be learned in a couple of years, but as Republicans, Americans in McLean County, we are resolved. We're not going anywhere. We are going to resolve ourselves to continue to speak to the truth and to the facts that will help our county and help our state.
What about at the local level, losing a couple of seats that were very much up for grabs and seemed to go down to the wire tonight?
It was a testimony to how tight races were when probably from our Democratic opponents, they thought throwing 100,000 plus into a race would make it a complete landslide, and in fact it wasn't. We have very satisfying results with Kathy Michael as our county clerk and winning her spot and retaining her role as our county clerk. And that of all the races was the one that was such focus and such energy put into it by the Democrats. The fact that we overcame that is a testimony that it takes more than money to win an election. It takes a caliber of candidate such as we had in Kathy Michael. And our other candidates, I am so proud of them. They all ran races with integrity and with good decorum, with respect. And although some lost, they didn't lose by that great of amount. And we are hopeful that that is just going to be a training ground for new candidates that will be coming in various races in the future.
Since these races were so close, I guess the armchair quarterbacking will begin now. Anything that you could have done differently to give them that last push over the top?
Well, the fact that we were dealing with such a financial difference between the amount of money that J.B. Pritzker was able to pour into our county races and the fact that we are not that caliber of funding in our county, it was really kind of so unusual to have that much money be put into a county race. I don't know that we want to look at it as, well, we just have to raise more money. That's not always the answer. We have to look at delivering our message, at helping voters understand the contrast between the candidates. And I think that we have some lessons learned, and we have some ideas that we have yet to be put forward that we will implement in the upcoming elections.
What are those lessons learned?
Well, that messaging is important, that the use of media is always an important element, that we need to have a strong grassroots local campaign. I think where we were successful was where in the precincts and districts where we could knock on more doors and people could have a face-to-face encounter with our candidates and helping our candidates understand the importance of that. And that is the basic ground game. And we are confident that we will be able to improve upon that.
As we look at the BEC vote, too, another element here, that coming up short tonight, anything that you feel could have been done differently to further the Republican message on that?
If we were able to have additional funding that could have delivered systems of communication, you know, that would have helped. We realized that people found that to be a very strange wording. Shall the city election laws be rejected? Your initial reaction is, no, I don't want to lose my election law. But helping them understand and the fact that such a large number of people did support it, even with our limited amount of education, that's something we're going to revisit. I think that it's the voters that did vote yes were recognizing the advantages of merging our systems. Even tonight, when we're sitting here trying to get results back, flipping back and forth from county to city and county to city, that is a good example of what can be eliminated by merging the two together. And I think when voters start to put that together, as so many of them did tonight, that it wouldn't take much more to put that over the edge. And therefore, it's something that we probably will revisit.
So we as in the Republican Party, now the Libertarians, headed up last time GOP joined it. Might GOP take the lead this time?
That's certainly a strong possibility. We had enough bipartisan support between the Libertarians and between actually other Democrats that came on board and were signing the petition to make it happen, that I think if the advance process is done more efficiently and clearly, that there will be even more people that will recognize it across the board, that as a nonpartisan issue, it's a benefit for the community. So we may very well take the lead, and I wouldn't have a problem with that at all.
This is Sound Ideas. Eric Stock with Connie Beer, the chairwoman for the McLean County Republican Party, after the election results. And as we look at gains that the Democrats made on the county board, there certainly, one would imagine, will be calling for greater influence on committees, additional assignments that they've not had in the past. Do you suspect that that will be an issue on the county board as there is more of an ideological balance?
I think it will be interesting to see how the limited experience of these new county board members are enabling them to have any impact. Many of we have some very experienced county board members now who know how to have an impact in our county, how to make things happen, how to develop and implement improvements and savings. It'll be interesting to see if these new candidates, who have very little limited experience in the real world, I will say, of business and development and government, will be able to have much of an impact. That will be yet to see.
We've heard so much about the term blue wave in the past couple of months. Do you feel that had an impact here? The fact that it appeared the Democrats were far more organized than they had been in the past and ran far more candidates than they have locally than in years past.
I do see that there was an impact. There was an impact that was candidates seemed to have a motivation that was driven based on a national view of our president. And that so often was the main motivation factor. And, you wonder, what impact does our national level have on the local county level? And you wonder, are you motivated to really help your neighbor and to help your local government? Are you just simply running out of a distaste in your opinion of the national president and that national government and impact? So I think that we have a great opportunity moving forward to learn what we've learned in this campaign. I don't believe the Democrats have completely had a blue wave here by any means. Obviously, they put thousands of dollars into the county clerk's race, and they've lost. So I'm hoping they realize that an election process isn't just about the money, and that they need to have viable candidates. I still think the jury is out on how well they are doing in actually having viable candidates. We'll see how the candidates that have been elected actually perform in the workplace and then make a judgment call on how successful they've been.
Connie Beer, the chair of the McLean County Republican Party, spoke with GLT's Eric Stock.
Support for GLT comes from Community Players Theater, presenting A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, a fast-paced musical comedy combining Roman plays with vaudeville, running 3 weekends in November. Details and tickets at communityplayers.org. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, two political scientists from Illinois State University look at the election results and decide what's what. Illinois Republicans are recouping and reassessing as well after the midterm election. State Representative Dan Brady won another term representing Bloomington Normal's 105th District. He's in House leadership. Brady credits constituent service for the win and his willingness to work with members of the opposite party to get things done, including his involvement in a higher education task force. GLT's Colleen Reynolds talked with Brady about his priorities and about working with Democratic Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker. First up, though, Brady says, is the fall veto session of the General Assembly.
One of my strongest priorities is my role in public higher education in the state as minority spokesman in the House. And on our working group, our bipartisan working group, which has worked very diligently dealing with legislation to help students with their financial responsibility and burdens through grant funding, through universities assistance funding from the state, and an AIM High program and other programs aimed at how do we keep the best and brightest in Illinois schools of secondary education. That's going to continue in a focus on a funding formula. During veto, we have meetings scheduled already, and so it's going to be an ongoing piece of important budget work, much like what was done through K-12.
Is there any piece of legislation will be coming before you in the veto session that you want to override the governor's veto on anything?
Well, I think we'll be looking at legislation dealing with the minimum salary for teachers in the state coming back on a potential overwrite. There may be some other legislation dealing with, obviously, aviation fuel and tax in the state of Illinois. The governor had vetoed. There will be the potential of other pieces of legislation introduced, which is not usually done in veto session, but with such a large number of in the House on both Democrat and Republican side, of those that announced retirements even before this election night came, it would might be in an environment where some things were rolled out vote-wise that hasn't been there before. Recreational use of marijuana, potential is there for some other things. So I think there'll be a number of things that aren't just veto overrides that we may be doing.
Typically, that is reserved for emergency-type legislation, though. Mm-hmm. Legalization of recreational marijuana, would that fall into emergency?
Not
for
in,
some people, yeah, I suppose.
Maybe, not in my opinion, but I'm not the Speaker of the House. I don't control the flow of legislation, and I've, in my career, seen things occur in veto session because of certain numbers changing in a majority or minority. The speaker will decide that, and so there may be other things with a large turnover in his caucus of retirements that he may bring other things in.
So this governor's race was the most expensive in any governor's race across this country. A lot of people would say it was an obscene amount of money spent. Give me your response to that. Is that a problem?
I think that it is a problem when you get to that amount of money. I mean, obviously, anyone is should be able to spend their dollars the way they see fit. But I think it's something that when you get to those levels, one of the most expensive in the country, we have to look at how we can truly look at the funding side of politics and how that's truly going to help the electorate, and the tone of ads and the politics of personal destruction. Those are things that just, to me, I'd like to see it removed somehow. I'm not sure how we do that, but the money seems to be the root of all evil.
Is there any incentive to change?
Well, I think the only way you have an incentive to change is that you look at what's been done in the past. And we need to look at what gives all potential candidates across the state the ability to run for office and try not to be a mismatch for resources. And so, you know, that is something that continues to be discussed in Springfield and has and will be in the future. And we'll just have to see what type of ideas come out.
We're talking with Republican State Representative Dan Brady. You talked about reaching across the aisle. It's a phrase that we hear a lot of. Is there going to be a change of attitude? Has what's happened with our national electorate sent a message, do you think, to lawmakers here in Illinois?
I don't know about the national side of things. I can only go by the Dan Brady rule, and the Dan Brady rule is try and treat others how you'd like to be treated, and when it comes to politics. And my colleagues who are the Democrats and my colleagues who are Republicans and independents and others just in the middle, when I get to a point that I don't think they bring something to the table, then that's when I'm missing the boat to be a good representative. I mean, I'd agree, but I listen. And I think if we had more of that and stability more and due course and civil respect in politics, I think we'd be doing, we would be doing the people that we're supposed to represent a better justice.
J.B. Pritzker, do you think you're going to be able to work with him? How do you feel about him as a leader?
I've worked with Republican and Democrat governors. I've disagreed and I've agreed. Important thing is we've done some good things. I have to keep doing good things for the 105th District. Who's ever in the governor's mansion, we're going to work with them.
Is there anything about what J.B. Pritzker said during his campaign that scares you?
No, I don't think there's anything that scares me. Everybody has different styles. Everybody should be given a chance and given an opportunity. And that's what I intend to do.
Looking at some local advisory referendums, one of the questions on the ballot poses the question, would you like to see an increase in your property tax to help pay for state pensions? Mm-hmm. And resoundingly in Bloomington and in rural McLean County and Normal, by about 73%, surprisingly, they said no. Mm-hmm. However, we still have funded pensions. Is there any plan that you see coming that will do more than what's been done in the past?
Well, not from this advisory referendum. What we have to do is get serious about the fact of what we're going to do and direct dollars into it. The General Assembly advisory referendum and no advisory referendum, we know taxes aren't popular. But if there's some stability of what could be done for pensions to stabilize them, whether that be change in 401k plans, whatever we do, we know we've made some changes in the past of new enrollees into the system. We know we've done some other things. But the reality has to be, if we're going to do something in the way of tax, we have to have a dedicated guarantee, as much as that's possible in Springfield, that money's going to go to pensions. It's going to go to stabilize the pension systems. When I talked to people in my legislative district, I said, you know, I could almost go for something like that to stabilize the pensions, protect them, make sure it's going to be there, if we could trust you folks in Springfield with what you're going to do with the money, if we give it to you. And that's where the ongoing debate goes.
Your opponent suggested a 1% to 2% tax on the highest income individuals. Is that something you could consider?
You know, I think as we go back, any options on the table, what is troublesome to me is that whatever we talk about in the way of revenue, that we have a streamlined funding that we know where it's going to go. We saw the temporary income tax that was voted on 5 years ago, and we saw what was done when it was sold to pay down the mountain of debt. It didn't go to all that. In fact, it went to very little of that. It went to stabilizing other programs, creating new programs. We can't have that. And this is going to be probably a very difficult position for a Republican such as myself to be in with the new controlled General Assembly and the new governor. But I'm willing to give that my best effort and work to the best of my ability.
One more question, and that has to do with another advisory referendum that asked voters what they thought about term limits. Would they favor term limits, and the results were pretty consistent. About 92% said yes. Mm-hmm. If there were term limits, there would be no Dan Brady, a state representative. What do you say to this overwhelming desire for term limits?
Well, I'd say it doesn't equate to those individuals who believe I do a good job, because they've said not only don't agree with the term limit, we want to put you back in, Dan, to continue your term. And the other thing is, we should be looking at term limits for caucus leaders, not to take away from the voters the ability for individuals like myself to run every 2 years and stand before the voters. The voters shouldn't have that taken away from them. It should be their ideas. You want to do something about the way Springfield operates? Look at term limits for caucus leaders. That's what should be looked at.
State Representative Dan Brady talking with GLT's Colleen Reynolds. Brady won his 10th term, defeating teacher Ben Webb. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Joining us now to pick over the bones of yesterday's election in Illinois are two political scientists from Illinois State University, Carrie Melita and Tom McClure. They're with the Department of Politics and Government. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
What are your top takeaways from the voting? Carrie, let's start with you.
So this was a pretty textbook midterm election. You know, we have this idea in political science called the surge in decline, which is that during presidential election years, the president's party has this sweep of down ballot victories or positive coattail effect, and then the president's party loses seats at midterm. And that's what we saw in this election. So I think it was a fairly textbook midterm election, as unexciting as that is to say.
And Tom?
I believe that this election has empowered the Senate even more so in terms of appointing judges and reshaping the judiciary. Now that the Senate is the only Republican branch, they're not going to have to worry about coming up with creative solutions for tough problems. Instead, they could focus on the judiciary, and that's going to be the legacy of President Trump.
And weren't they already going to do that?
They have a buffer now. There was a question when the Kavanaugh nomination came up whether there would be enough defectors to cause that nomination to fail. Now there's no question that whoever Trump puts up is going to be approved.
But why does that equate why does the House control equate to a freeing of senators?
Because now there's not going to have to be any focus on trying to get legislation through both houses. Instead, the only thing the Senate's going to be able to accomplish, in my view, other than negotiating budgets from time to time, is going to be just a selection of judges.
So what will happen in Congress, Carrie?
I think, the President Trump did a press conference this morning where he spoke of reaching out to Democrats and working on common interests like an infrastructure bill, maybe even amenable immigration reform. So, I mean, it remains to be seen whether that was just an empty promise that was made. But that's fairly standard. The first press conference that President Obama did for his first midterm when his party, the Democrats, lost control of the House, just same thing that happened in this case. He made kind of a similar outreach rhetoric, which didn't pan out. But I guess we're just going to have to wait to see how that goes.
So you've already said that it's not a blue wave. Turnout up, but not startlingly. The Democratic Party pick up 29 House seats, about average for a midterm, losing three Senate seats when so many Democratic seats were up this year. That also not surprising. So why all the hype about a blue wave then?
I think it's exciting, right? It makes for a really good story, and it probably makes voters feel really good that, you know, that they made a difference, that those that turned out, and those that turned out did make a difference. It's just that we had turnout of about 49%. I mean, it's a little higher than average for a midterm, but not historically so. And I think it just makes for a really good narrative moving forward.
So was it a case of all the hype created a small increase in turnout, or was there truly something different that failed to materialize?
I think the hype probably got voter turnout up. What was really disappointing was we're starting to look at the demographics that turned out to vote, and this was supposed to be the youth year, right, the youth vote, and it looks like about 13% of those under the age of 30 voted. So this, unfortunately, wasn't the youth vote, but it was other demographics kind of giving us a little bit of a bump in turnout for a midterm year.
What should Republicans and Democrats use as a takeaway for 2 years from now from this election, Tom?
Well, I think that the Democrats need to be realistic that some of the seats that they have captured were won by moderate Democrats as opposed to persons who are on the extreme left. So I think that they need to make sure that their message is something that appeals to the average voter as opposed to their base. The Republicans, on the other hand, I think that they are in a very difficult spot because a lot of them are fearful of going against the president because of how he could react to them. So I'm not quite sure where they can go. Some of them have difficulty supporting the agenda, and I think that those who do oppose the agenda are going to be the ones who are going to end up on the losing end.
Carrie, what's your advice to Democrats and Republicans?
Yeah, I think that working together on key issues like infrastructure might be a good way to move going forward. There is still a lot of ill will amongst the public for partisans and establishment and people that they perceive to be insiders. And the next election we face in 2020 will be a presidential election, which turnout tends to be a lot higher. When turnout is higher, you tend to have more moderates being swept into office because most Americans are moderate. When you have midterm elections where it's just kind of the partisans that show up, that's when you get the more ideologically extreme candidates being elected. So moving forward, just keeping in mind that 2020 will be an election where there are more moderates that are turning out to vote. So their records are going to need to reflect that.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. With us are Carrie Melita and Tom McClure of Illinois State University's Department of Politics and Government. One of the more pronounced artifacts of the election in Illinois is the continued divergence of the urban and rural votes. Why is that happening?
Well, historically, that's been where we've been for some time. I think what we've seen here is that the urban areas have consistently gone Democrat, but there's a shift that's taking place in downstate Illinois. I think we're becoming more and more Democrat.
Downstate's becoming more Democrat?
I think it's becoming more Democrat. I think you're seeing that in areas such as in north central Illinois, that typically was not voting as strongly Democrat as it was this last election. For instance, the suburbs this time, the suburbs were more favorable to Pritzker than they were to Rauner when he ran 4 years ago.
Is that an artifact of Rauner? Or is that a Trump effect? What is that? It's been going more blue in the Chicago suburbs for some election cycles, but did something accelerate it in particular this time?
You know, this is something that it's not unique to Illinois. This is a pattern that we're seeing nationwide. America is becoming a country of those that reside in urban areas and their associated suburbs, and those that live in rural America. That's the big divide now. It's not a partisan thing. It's not a cultural thing, or it simply is just culture. It's those that live in rural America versus urban America. And I think what we're seeing in Illinois is really just a sorting process of what's going on in basically all 50 states.
Should Democrats and Republicans be worried about that sort? Tom?
I think they just need to be to adapt. I've got hope that at one point we're going to have a strong moderate voice again. I know it doesn't seem like it's realistic right now, but I think that most voters, the ones who decide the election, are in the middle. And I think if the parties are sensitive to that, it's going to reap results that are going to be favorable.
Will the national become writ small? I mean, we've already seen Nikita Richards, the Democratic county clerk candidate, lose big time in the rural area and come close to winning in the urban areas. Is that a bad sign for partisanship at the local government level?
I don't think it was a big surprise that McLean County continued to go Republican for a Republican incumbent. So as enthusiastic as Nikita Richards was as a candidate, I don't think that that's enough to undo that strong Republican culture in McLean County.
Carrie, any thoughts there?
Yeah, I think Tom's right. I think that it's being mindful of the new urban-rural divide as Democrats and Republicans move forward. And that's going to entail representing different types of issues for Democrats and Republicans, which might pull the parties even further apart now that we're seeing this constituency sorting. So while it's difficult to imagine, I'm worried that this might actually polarize the parties further looking forward.
Is the urban-rural sort likely to create more difficulty in finding compromise? I mean, we did away with earmarks, so the horse trading that goes on in addressing, I have my issue, you have your issue, let's stick both of them in a bill together, that's a little more difficult to achieve now. Is it even more difficult when you have this sort of non-coincidence of interests?
Yeah, I think so. So it's not a matter of that Democrats and Republicans have different opinions on issues. It's that they're talking about different issues. They're not talking about the same types of policy preferences. And that's even harder to compromise on because one side doesn't even think that an issue should be on the table. So it definitely makes compromise trickier.
Tom?
I think that how divided the country is, both at the national and the state level, is such that it's going to make it very difficult for a divided government to get anything accomplished. I am optimistic that Illinois is going to be able to move forward now that there's not going to be that gridlock. But I just don't see that as long as there's a division that anything is going to be done.
Well, let's look at Illinois. The lack of gridlock also equates, at least in the present instance, to a supermajority by Democrats in the General Assembly. But solutions to Illinois' problems are going to require some unpleasant votes. The Democrats, do you think, going to be able to take those unpleasant votes?
Well, they're going to have to make some tough decisions, but it would not surprise me if there was an increase in taxes some way or another in order to deal with the outstanding debt problem of the state as well as the pension shortfall.
Carrie Melita, is there any way for the Democrats to attract any Republican votes at all on a matter that they don't need to participate in because they are so far in the minority?
Absolutely. And the same could be said for Republicans. If there's a really strong electoral incentive for either party to just make one or two steps back towards the middle, because that's still where most of the country is and where most of the country feels that both parties have left them behind. So any attempts at bipartisanship or working across the aisles, I think all the evidence suggests, will be greatly rewarded electorally.
Is there evidence of purpling of America that isn't reflected in who's getting elected?
Absolutely. And one of the best ways to look at this is the ballot measures that took place at the state level across about 20 different states, where you have what we think of as very conservative states, like Utah, for instance, legalizing recreational marijuana or medicinal marijuana, and states like Michigan, a fairly middle of the road Midwestern state, legalizing it recreationally. And the big thing behind this is that when we look at election results, all we see is the red state or the blue state. But we don't see the nuanced purple in the middle, which is still the norm in America. That's what we are. We're not, people aren't as polarized as the parties are.
What are some more of those ballot initiatives that indicate an unexpected middle?
Well, so in the state of Florida, my home state, we had a Republican win the governorship. Pretty comfortable, close margin, but then we also had a ballot measure that passed handedly by well over 60% to restore voting rights to ex-felons. Florida had one of the more restrictive laws on the books, which basically said that if you had ever been convicted of a felony, your voting rights were permanently stripped as long as you lived in that state, and that was done away with through a ballot measure. So in states where you had red walls, you still had progressive ballot measures being handedly adopted by the electorate, which just, I think, really suggests it's not that people are more polarized, it's that the choices that we're being given are more polarized in terms of candidates.
Tom, any observation?
I really don't have anything further to add.
This is Sound Ideas. Carrie Melita and Tom McClure are political scientists at Illinois State University. Republican Congressman Rodney Davis and Darren LaHood will now be in the minority. Davis has worked as a staffer in the minority, but this would be his first time as an elected representative in the minority. And, of course, LaHood has not been there that long. How do you think they're going to adjust, Tom?
I don't think you're going to see any changes in the way that Darren LaHood operates his office. He's in a safe, conservative district. He had a very good margin of victory. So I think he's going to be able to just conduct business as usual. Rodney Davis, on the other hand, just barely eked by this election cycle. I think that you're going to see the way that he functions is going to be a little bit different, and that you're going to see more times that he may be against the president in his votes. Just so that he could show that he is more of a moderate as opposed to a hardline conservative.
Yeah, his opponent mentioned that his voting record is about 97% with Trump, even though he has some bipartisanship that he points to. So what would a meaningful divergence from the Trump litmus test be?
Well, it perhaps is going to be on the area of immigration. I'm just trying to think of what could realistically get there, or infrastructure. I mean, if there's, and this is maybe pork barrel politics, but if there's an infrastructure bill and he can bring home the bacon to central Illinois, it would be a way he could support the president, support the district, and he could present himself as someone who is doing something that's consistent with the will of the voters. On the other hand, I could see that he could oppose the president on immigration.
So is there a loss of clout to central Illinois because of the new minority status of LaHood and Davis? Is the ability to participate in the fruits of an infrastructure bill or of an immigration bill less for this area now?
I don't know that it really made that much difference. I think the only place that you're really going to see differences in clout would be at the congressional level, at the committee level, but not necessarily for the president. I'm thinking that the president right now looks to the representatives when he makes appointments in the state of Illinois, and I think that he will continue to do so. So I don't think that from that point of view, Davis or LaHood have any less clout than they did before.
There's an old saying that voters tend not to like political neophytes in top jobs. They want somebody with experience, or at least they behave that way, even though they say they don't. We do now have two consecutive Illinois governors who contradict that conventional wisdom, who are, new to political office right at the top. Do we distinguish that by saying, millionaire, billionaire, or is something else going on here?
We don't like you know, neophytes in top jobs, but what we also don't like even more right now are political insiders and people that we perceive as members of the long-term political establishment. That's very much a trend in many states right now that we're seeing where we like to have kind of these outsider businessmen come in. The idea, I mean, that was our president that we elected that can come in and shake up politics as usual. It's this idea that those that lack the political experience might be able to do something in the lines of disrupting the establishment.
And 2 years ago, pollsters got it way wrong. How about this time? Carrie Melita?
Our models are back very accurately. This was about as textbook as we could get. Democrats took the House, and that's about what we expected them to do. So not a blue wave, but not a red wave either.
So what's the guarantee, if there is such a thing, that the models will remain accurate and not be subject to yet another curveball?
I think that 2016 was the hiccup. I mean, you know, models, you know, we always have margin of error in our predictive modeling, and I think 2016 was just the blip. But by and large, it looks like our models are going to be accurate moving forward.
And Tom McClure, very quickly, any final observations about the midterm?
In terms of the midterm, there were really no surprises. And I think that what we're going to see is that we've now started the presidential campaign today.
Tom McClure and Carrie Melita are with the Department of Politics and Government at Illinois State University. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal. WGLT.org is where you can find Sound Ideas interviews with help today from Eric Stock, Mary Cullen, Ryan Denham, and a cast of thousands. You can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or NPR One. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.